Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 20. Conversation between Maitreya and Vidura, text 2. Shuddha Maha Bhagavata, Krishnasyai Kantika Suhit,
Krishnasyai Kantika Suhit.
Yatsatyajagrajam Krishne,
Yatsatyajagrajam Krishne,
Sapatyam Agavaniti,
Sapatyam Agavaniti,
Shattha Maha Bhagavata,
Shattha Maha Bhagavata,
Krishnasyai Kantika Suhit,
Krishnasya
Kantikasuhit. Krishne,
Krishne.
Sapatyan Bhagavaniti,
Sapatyan Bhagavaniti.
Shattha Maha Bhagavata,
Shattha Maha Bhagavata.
Krishnasya Kantikasuhit,
Krishnasya Kantikasuhit.
Yastatya Jagrajam Krishne,
Yastatya Jagrajam Krishne,
Sapatyam Bhagavaniti,
Sapatyam Bhagavaniti.
Shatta
Vidura,
Mahabhagavata,
Mahabhagavata,
great devotee of the Lord,
great devotee of the Lord,
Krishnasya,
Krishnasya,
of Lord Krishna,
of Lord Krishna,
Ekantika,
Ekantika,
on the Lord devotee,
on the Lord devotee,
Suhit,
Suhit,
intimate friend,
Ya,
he who,
Tatyaja,
abandon,
Agrajam,
his elder brother,
King
Dhritarashtra,
Krishne,
toward Krishna,
Sa'apatyam,
along with his 100 sons,
Aghavan,
offender, Itchi,
thus.
Translation. Shaunaka Rishi inquired about Vidura, who was a great devotee and friend of Lord Krishna, and who gave up the company of his elder brother because the latter, along with his sons, played tricks against the desires of the Lord. Purport. The incident referred to here is that Vidura left the protection of his elder brother Dhritarashtra, went traveling everywhere to sacred places, and met Maitreya at Hardwar. Shaunaka Rishi here inquires about the topics of the conversation between Maitreya Rishi and Vidura. Vidura's qualification was that he was not only a friend of the Lord, but also a great devotee. When Krishna tried to stop the war and mitigate the misunderstanding between the cousin brothers, they refused to accept his counsel, and therefore Shatta, or Vidura, was unsatisfied with them, and he left the palace. As a devotee, Vidura showed by example that anywhere that Krishna is not honored is a place unfit for human habitation. A devotee may be tolerant regarding his own interests, but he should not be tolerant when there is misbehavior toward the Lord or the Lord's devotee. Here the word Agavan is very significant, for it indicates that the Kauravas, Dhritarashtra's sons, lost the war because of being sinful in disobeying the instructions of Krishna. Om Agyana Chimanam Dasya Gyananjana Shalatya Chakshan Maritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurubhena Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This verse is referring to the cause for Saint Vidura's leaving the palace of Hastinapur and going on pilgrimage, and eventually he would wind up in the association of Uddhava and Maitreya, and in this way he would get transcendental instruction. Now, everyone knew that Dhritarashtra was too attached to his crooked son, Duryodhana. Dhritarashtra knew his son was wrong, his chief son out of 100 sons. He knew he was wrong. He knew he was rotten. From the very birth of Duryodhana, all the sages, all the Vedic seers were saying, this son is going to be a huge problem. Detach yourself from him. But Dhritarashtra couldn't do that, even though he knew full well that this boy is impossible. He can't be corrected. He's just a big problem child. Maybe you, even these days you've seen that. Just some children, they're just from their very birth path, they're just meant to cause problems. They're very time as a little kid, they're putting bombs in people's post boxes and letting the air out of people's tires and just doing horrible things. I was just in Melbourne, and someone was telling me he goes to detention homes and gives motivational speeches for the youth. And he told me how they said, oh, you think you're the staff at the detention center said, you think you're a big motivational speaker? Okay, we got a case for you. Talk to this young boy of 14 years old. He's here for killing his grandmother. So, this person sat down with this 14-year-old boy. Okay, what happened? I'm killing your grandmother. And the boy just said, I was just overwhelmed with drugs and I just didn't know what I was doing and I'm angry at society, so I just took out my anger on her. So you just shake your head, you scratch your head and say, obviously this kid was just a burden for the world, a disgrace to his family, problem child. And it doesn't happen simply to low-income people. Even in the so-called higher levels of society, higher level determined by wealth, these things go on. In the USA, there was a case of some years ago, a high school boy and girl, the ideal boys and girls, high marks, high achievers, sociable, participating in all the high school activities, sports, and this and that and the other. They have people like that in New Zealand. The ideal high school students, Obviously, their future looks great, Any of you were like that in high school? You don't get any of those here, right? Does that look like that? All rebels, huh? You weren't like that, Steve? I was. they're 16 years old. Just all success was there. Nice middle class family. They got whatever they wanted. They had their own cars. This, that, the other. They're both had a dream to go to the military academies in the USA, to go to the Air Force Academy or to the Naval Academy. Means you have to be on the top. You even have to get a recommendation from your, what you call an MP, like that. It means you've made it. It's almost like, going to Yale or Harvard, going to the U.S. Military Academy, be an officer. They were both on their way to the military academy, cream of the crop. So they were a couple, and they were known throughout their city, a small city, as being ferociously attached to each other. 16-year-old, 17-year-old, intense rajogun romance. Even their friends were saying, these guys are really interesting. So Once the boy, he was driving home from an athletic meet, athletic event, match, and there was another girl with him. This is how things happen, you know, just by association. As Bhagavad Gita says, karanam guna sankosya sadasadyami janasu. The cause is material nature. You associate material nature, you get problems. He said, what's he doing driving, you know, another girl, you know, in the car, you know, it's an athletic match 2 hours away. That's nothing these days, right? No one would think anything of it, you know. It's like all the time you're seeing men and women, police officers driving in a car together, you know, 8 hours a day. So, then, due to the natural influence of material nature, you know, male, female body alone together, you know, they became attracted and they stopped the car and went behind a building and engaged in their animalistic pursuits, and then, you know, he drove her back home. But he was so attached to his girlfriend that out of guilt he told her. One of those men are thinking, fool. You would think, all right, what did he say something for? Okay. Even if you realize you made a mistake, you don't say anything. This is the Western standard. You just keep it to yourself. So, no, he was so attached. He told her. And then she gave her verdict. There's only one thing you can do to satisfy me. You have to kill her. So they made this plan. He called her up and asked her for a date. And he picked her up and drove her to a lonely area, wilderness. And then while he was driving, his girlfriend, she was in the boot of the car. And it was one of those cars that you can get from the boot into the back seat. So as they were driving, she came out of the boot of the car and with one of these metal weights, you know, weightlifters use, and just screamed and attacked the girl. And then they stopped the car and she dragged the girl out of the car, beating her in the head with this metal weight. And then the boyfriend, he had a gun and he shot the girl in the head. And, you know, they're all 16, 17 year olds. All from nice homes, nice families, everything perfect, success guaranteed. This is what happened. So, nothing was ever heard of it. The girl was missing, listed as missing. The police couldn't solve it. No one's ever suspected, you know, these ideal youth. But then, and they actually did go to the service academy. She went to the Naval Academy, he went to Air Force Academy. You know, top of society. And then one day she was talking with her girlfriends, other ladies at the Naval Academy. Yeah. They were talking about, you know, their boyfriends or who, you know, their hopes for boyfriends. And she said, well, guess what? And she pointed, she had his picture over her bed. She said, he's so attached to me, he'll kill for me. What about the girls? Like, what do you mean? Wow, that's real chastity. That's real dedication. And then she actually told them. it is said, I don't know if you all agree, but it's said that certain gender can't keep secrets. So she told them. And of course, what did they do? They immediately went and told the officials at the Naval Academy, our roommate just told us that she and her boyfriend killed a girl. So then the police were called in and the whole investigation started, and there was no question, you know, of doubt. They both were taken to prison awaiting trial, and the boy was so foolish, he's writing her letters, you know, from one prison to another, telling her, don't say this to the police, don't say that. And of course, you know, when you're in prison under arrested, you know, the police can read your post, you know. But this is what motivation does to you. It just makes you nuts. So, they both got sentenced to life imprisonment. Can you imagine being 18 years old and be sentenced to life imprisonment with no possibility of parole? You wonder, what kind of youth were these? Apparently their external surroundings were ideal, like, North Shore Auckland types, Do you have any North Shore Aucklanders here? I guess Gorachi's gone. Tria Soda? You're not North Shore? Huh? Burman? You were North Shore? I didn't know that. Everything seemed to be nice. But obviously they had some horrible desires in them. Or maybe it's just the mode of passion due to contact with them. They just went nuts. In any case, when the boy was sentenced to life imprisonment, the family of the girl who had, of the murdered girl, some of them are saying, he's an animal. He deserves everything he gets. The mother of the girl who was murdered said, I don't feel sorry for him, but I feel sorry for his parents who have to endure such a disgrace of their family. So, these bad apples are there in every barrel. And it causes a whole family to look so bad. Like they're starved for a lifetime. You can imagine they probably would move out of the area. Start again somewhere. Is that what they do in New Zealand? Just move to another town or something? Or do they stay? The families who had someone in the family who does something abominable and atrocious. Or you do it New Zealand style, you just don't talk about it to anyone's face, but you whisper behind your back. That guy who lives across the street, his son is an offender, he did this and that. That's how it's done. But then everyone, keeps nice etiquette and courtesy towards each other externally. Nothing like that ever happened in Cambridge or
a couple of things.
Mm-hmm. And how did everyone treat it?
Just don't explain.
Just externally act like everything's okay, but behind the back. So, here you have Duryodhan. He is a disaster in the Kuru dynasty. Everyone knows it, even his father. His mother knows it too, and usually mothers are partial toward their sons. Gandhari, so austere. She understood, my son is, he's a complete problem case. He's going to cause our ruination. But the father would not discipline his son, although so many sages advised him to do that. Even Gandhari would hint, you've got to do something about this boy. He wouldn't do it, although he knew his boy was wrong. This is the power of attachment, material attachment. So, how the Pandavas were cheated and were forced to go into exile for 13 years. Then they came back out of exile and they asked, please give us our rightful share back. They sent Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, the Pandavas sent him to Hastinapur to negotiate with the Kurus on their behalf. Just see how the Lord renders service to his devotees. We're always thinking that Krishna is the master, but Krishna enjoys being the servant. He acts as the messenger of the Pandavas. He considers their house to be his house because the house of the Pandavas gives pleasure to the Lord, it's a holy dham. Anything that pleases the senses of Krishna is as good as Krishna. It is Krishna. So the Lord would just treat the Pandava's house as his own. He would go there and be very casual, reclining, eating, joking. And he became the Pandava's messenger. He went to Hastinapur as a last peace mission, as the war clouds were gathering on the horizon. As he was leaving the Pandava's encampment to go to Hastinapur, Arjuna gave him the proposal, "Please let it be known to the Kauravas that we'll accept half of the kingdom, nothing less." This way, it seems they're giving instruction to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is eager to serve his devotees, and the devotees are eager to serve Krishna. There's an eternal competition going on. The devotee does something for Krishna, and Krishna thinks, "I have to do something more for the devotee." And then the devotee thinks, "I have to do something more for Krishna." Eternally goes on like this. And all this competition of service goes on beyond the changes of the body. So the more you become absorbed in devotional service, the more you become oblivious to the changes of the body, because you'll be caught up in this ever-increasing taste of bhakti rasa, the taste of devotional service to the Lord. In this way, you become free from the influence of the modes of material nature, which victimize everyone. So Krishna, accompanied by a grand procession, went to Hastinapur. Dhritarashtra and his sons, they knew Krishna's coming. So they were discussing before Krishna's arrival, what to do. Dhritarashtra, the grandfather, the father of Duryodhana and company, he had a strategic proposal. "Let us give Krishna a wonderful welcome. Let us offer him all wealth, all facility. We'll put him in the most opulent palace. I think Dushyasana's palace is the most opulent. He can stay there. There'll be dancing girls. There'll be entertainment. There'll be good food." He even said, he's the Lord of creation. Let him have everything. Sounded good. Then persons like Vidura and Bhishma, they gave their advice that, "Yes, you want to offer Krishna all this wealth because you're hoping to flatter him. But you should understand that Krishna will not be influenced. Whether you receive him well or not, Krishna has his desires, and his desires will be fulfilled." As this verse states, the Kauravas play tricks against the desires of the Lord. So Bhishma and Vidura pointed out to Dhritarashtra, "Don't think you can flatter Krishna, like offering him some madhu or something, and then he's going to be partial to you. He has his desires." In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a person. Persons have desires. He's a supreme person, so he has supreme desires. That the Lord has supreme desires means his desires are infallible. So whether you give him a great reception or not, it's not going to make a difference for the achievement of his desires. Of course, it'll be good for you to offer him a good reception, but it's not going to impede the Lord's desires. You can't flatter him. So then the rascal Duryodhana began to speak. "Why should we give wealth to Krishna?" That's a good point, Bhishma and Vidura said. "Yeah, why should we give wealth to Krishna? Since there's going to be a war anyway, why waste the money?" Very strategic, you know, in a mundane sense, you know. Yeah, right. They say the Lord is impartial. They say the Lord is equal to everyone. So then don't spend the money. Especially since we're going to fight anyway. Save the money. So, Krishna arrived, and he got right to the point. They offered him a seat, equal seat, and Krishna said that I'm coming as a messenger, and I'm asking that there be peace between the two factions. First thing the Gaurava said was, let's just have lunch. Let's have some lunch. We can discuss these things later. Why don't we just have a nice banquet? And Krishna said, I don't accept lunch until my mission as a messenger is fulfilled. Duryodhana was quick to be insulted. Denying our food? And Krishna said, this food will be served not with love, but with other motivations. I won't accept it. Nor will I stay in your facilities. I'm going to stay with my devotee, Vidura. Very insistent about that. So then the Lord went to stay with Vidura. And Vidura told him, these guys are incorrigible. They can't be corrected. They're ready for war. They may even attack you while you're here, which is very abominable, because according to Vedic etiquette, a messenger is not attacked. A messenger between two camps is not attacked. He's treated very respectfully, and you listen to him and send the message back. So to attack a messenger is considered just totally morally abominable. But Vidura could detect. That's what Duryodhana is thinking to do. So then Krishna returned to the royal assembly and made his peace proposal. What's the point in fighting? What's the point in all these soldiers, great personalities, dying? Now this is amazing, because so many people think that Bhagavad Gita is a book which advocates war and that it's all the fault of Krishna. So many people, especially in Western countries, they think that Bhagavad Gita advocates holy wars and God is saying fight and kill. They don't know that Krishna himself went to plead for peace. Don't fight. This will be unnecessary slaughter. Don't do it. He also told the Kauravas, you're going to lose. There's no way you can win. This way, that way, this way, that way, Krishna presented the situation. First he spoke affectionately, you all are great, you all are magnanimous. Then he spoke practically, like, this is not going to work, everyone will die. And then he spoke to arouse fear. How can you defeat these great heroes? Remember Bhima's anger? How can you cope with that? Everyone was impressed except Duryodhana. Even Dhritarashtra, the father of Duryodhana, knew this is right, this is right. But Duryodhana wouldn't accept. Vidura spoke out, this is true. Bhishma spoke out, even though militarily he's aligned with Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. Bhishma spoke out, this is exactly the truth. Even Dhritarashtra said, it's true. And he appealed to his son, please, please, let's make peace. But Duryodhana wouldn't accept. All these people speaking, they're partial to the Pandavas. Krishna hinted to Dhritarashtra, look, you've got to do something about your son before he destroys everyone. But Dhritarashtra said, I've said all that I can. Maybe someone else can say something. This was Dhritarashtra's great mistake. He would not take action against his son. He knew his son was wrong, but because of material attachment, he said, what can I do? I've done my part. I told him it's wrong. Then, because Duryodhana would not back down, Dhritarashtra said, call his mother in. Call Gandhari in. Maybe she can influence him. And Gandhari said the same thing. What are you doing? Why are you causing this huge disaster? Still, Duryodhana wouldn't listen. So then The royal assembly broke up. Everyone went to their respective quarters. And Duryodhan met with his lieutenants. Not only did they have no intention of making peace, but they are also scheming. Look, here's our chance to get rid of Krishna. He's come here unarmed. If we attack Krishna and imprison him, the Pandavas will lose all their strength, all their heart. So this is the way to do it. While he's sitting on the throne, we grab him and we lock him up. This is how gross and out of it these guys were. So everyone returned to the main assembly hall in the palace, and again Krishna is appealing for peace, and one of Krishna's party, he noticed movements amongst Duryodhana's followers. Just by, as an expert general, he could tell how their muscles were moving, how their minds were moving. He leaned over to Krishna and he said, "I detect that Duryodhana and company are about to attack you." What did Krishna do? He laughed. Let him come. Let's see what happens. So, again, Krishna went on, pointing out Duryodhana's great mistakes, pointing out the futility of violence, the futility of war, in which almost everyone would die. And finally, Krishna said, "If you fight, only the Pandavas will be left alive. Everyone else is going to be dead." Duryodhana couldn't take it. He and his followers made a move to attack Lord Sri Krishna. At that moment, Krishna displayed his universal form, just stunning everyone. And that's how the whole scene ended, because no one could cope with seeing the universal form of the Lord. Krishna didn't even fight. He just displayed his universal form and just paralyzed the minds of everyone. They had never seen such a thing before. Dhritarashtra, of course, you know, he's blind. But he begged. He prayed to the Lord because his secretary, Sanjaya, was telling him what's going on. Dhritarashtra prayed, "Oh, my Lord, let me see this form." So for a few moments, Krishna allowed the universal form. And then when Krishna left, the blindness returned to Dhritarashtra. So Krishna did all these things to stop the battle of Kurukshetra. Duryodhana had every chance and more. But he was so black-hearted, so corrupt, and Dhritarashtra would not intervene. The situation came down to that Dhritarashtra would have to arrest his own son. That was the only way to avoid the battle. And others were telling him to do that. Bhishma was saying, "Do that." Vidura was saying, "Do that." Krishna was saying, "Do that." Gandhari, Duryodhana's own mother, the mother of the son, saying, "My husband has to do something about this, otherwise..." Dhritarashtra wouldn't do it, though. He would just say, "What can I do? I've said it. He's not listening." And this way, Dhritarashtra is embracing his own fall because of too much attachment for his son. So, in this situation, Vidura kept giving good advice, telling Dhritarashtra, "This son is going to ruin you. Get rid of him." And finally, Duryodhana got very angry. So, "Who is Vidura to speak like this? He's the son of a kept woman." Because Vidura, he's the son of royalty and a mistress. The Kshatriya kings, when they married wives, would also associated with the maidservants of the wives, and that way the maidservants would get children. It was considered proper in Vedic times because the women would be taken care of, they would be protected. A royal lady would be surrounded by maidservants. At the time of her marriage, the maidservants would go with her. So how were they supposed to have their families? So they were allowed to associate with the a Kshatriya and had children, so in that way Vidura was born. But such children, born of a maidservant, could never inherit the kingdom, although they would live on the same level of opulence as the royal children from the wife or from the wives of the king, rather than the maidservant. So Vidura was one of those children of a maidservant, Dasiputra. So Vidura, Duryodhan brought that point up. What are we doing listening to this son of a kept woman? What does he know? He dares to advise us. We all know he's partial to the Pandavas. Doesn't he remember who's maintaining him? So, stung by these words, Vidura left the palace. The words are described in the Bhagavatam to be like arrows entering the ears. So his heart was aggrieved and he left. But he recognized that this incident was a chance for him to depend more on Krishna by going on pilgrimage to holy places. Therefore, the Bhagavatam explains that in this situation, both the external and internal potencies of the Lord were working together, Mahamaya and Yogamaya. Mahamaya is a division of Yogamaya. So, the Mahamaya caused Duryodhan and company to act in such an abominable way. Because these persons choose to associate with the material energy. Therefore, all these problems come. But Yogamaya, the spiritual energy of the Lord, was also acting in order to give Vidura an excuse to leave home for going on pilgrimage and eventually hearing from Aishwarya Muni. So in this way you can see that it is true for a devotee that every cloud has a silver lining. Externally it looks very bad for Vidura. Internally it's very good. And Vidura understood this. Still you should note, he's described in the Bhagavatam as leaving home with an aggrieved heart, and the arrows have entered his ears of Duryodhan's sharp words. We have to be very careful how we treat devotees. It's very easy to say things to devotees that will rattle in their consciousness for many years. There's an expression, loose lips sink ships. So, be very careful, even when you get very upset, what you say to a devotee, because those words can just linger in that person's consciousness for 10 years. I've seen it. Try not to say barbed things, because it's the words that are remembered more than anything. Sharp words, like arrows entering the ears. We should always be very sensitive and gentle towards all devotees, eager to serve devotees. Then we'll be protected against offenses. And more positively speaking, Krishna will show us the glories of devotee association. That is the mission of the Panchatattva, to show how there is combination in tasting love of Krishna. Nityananda, Dvaita, Lord Chaitanya, Gadadhara, Srivas, they're all the absolute truth, different features of the absolute truth, dancing and chanting together, showing how to taste Krishna praying, love of Krishna, in sangha, in association. So once we stop offending devotees, or minimizing devotees, then Krishna reveals to us the glories of devotee association. Please remember that Krishna has desires because he's a person. You all know what it's like to have desires. Krishna also has desires. The constitutional position of a devotee is to satisfy the desires of Krishna. Therefore, we're always trying to be conscious of what is Krishna's desire. The more we think like that, the more we advance in Krishna consciousness. Then Krishna becomes real to you. Not just theology, religious belief, but becoming conscious of Krishna's desires, the supreme desires of the Supreme Person. Then bhakti becomes real to you, rather than just a belief. So as you advance in bhakti yoga, you indeed become more and more aware of Krishna's personal desires. And that's where your fulfillment in Krishna consciousness comes from, fulfilling Krishna's desires. Because people have no understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have no understanding of what are the desires of the Lord. Therefore, they're only left with one alternative. Let me satisfy my own desires. And sometimes if they're a little too over-intelligent, they become impersonalist. They think the solution is, okay, I was frustrated dealing with my desires, the solution is to annihilate all desires. But they never think that there are perfect desires. Krishna is showing there are perfect desires. And when you mold your desires to Krishna's desires, then your desires are perfect. And no longer will you see repeated birth and death. No longer will you risk the horrible contamination by material energy which drags you down just by your association with it. Jyoti's last words to end all thoughts of peace, his last words were, I won't give the Pandavas kingdom, half of the kingdom, I won't even give them enough land to drive a pin into. So, war ensued. But please remember this. What great lengths Krishna himself personally went to try to bring peace to avoid the battle of Kurukshetra. As I said, people don't know that. I think Bhagavad Gita is a war book. It's one of those holy war scriptures. Jihad. No. Meanwhile, no. Some people criticize, of course, but it's not that everyone's criticizing when the president of the USA says, we're fighting in the Middle East for the sake of world freedom. That's okay. But if someone says, we're fighting because of the desires of Lord Krishna, ooh, fanaticism, holy war, yeah, religious intolerance. But if President Bush says, we're in the Middle East, I know that there's loss of life, and it appalls me that our soldiers are dying, but it's necessary for the cause of freedom in the world. There's nothing going on. If Krishna does something, criticism. Doing something for Krishna's desires, fanaticism. But for the sake of freedom in the world, whatever that means, there can be so much fighting. The general who was in charge of the invasion of Iraq. He's retired now, but before he retired, he was running the whole invasion of Iraq. And so, every day, he leaves his home to go to the office, his military office, and there's a puja that his wife does, a ritual that his wife does. As he's at the door, she comes, gives him a hug and kisses him, and then says softly into his ear, every day, make the world a safer place for democracy, honey. That gives him the mantra to fire him up, you know. So no one criticizes that. Okay, some people do, but the majority do not criticize. But if Krishna does something, oh, what kind of God is this? How can this be God causing war, riding on a chariot, driving a chariot, saying, Mama Nusmala Yudhyam Cha, fight and think of me. Oh, we don't want this fanaticism. But for democracy, for world freedom, oh, we'll give up our lives. This is what's going on. So please try to understand Krishna in truth. Please try to understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead has perfect desires. Duryodhana and company were warned, the desires of Lord Krishna are infallible. You have no hope. He wouldn't listen. He just thought Krishna was an ordinary person. We'll attack him. We'll imprison him. That'll take the heart out of the Pandavas. This is how low he was. How disgusting he was. All right. Any questions? Yes.
If involved in the company Krishna, why wasn't Dhritarashtra's intelligence strong enough to...
Material attachment. He knew his son was wrong.
But why wasn't his intelligence strong enough to overcome his material attachment?
Good question. That's how strong material attachment is. Therefore, don't be materially attached if you want to have intelligence. It's not automatic, you know, that someone has intelligence, they choose the right thing. He was too attached. It's never happened to you in your life that attachment overwhelmed good reason and logic? Okay, so... happens all the time. Because of the power of material nature, and because of the power of your material attachment, the two combine and make a deadly combination. You agree to consort with material nature because of your desires. Then the problem gets worse, the attachment increases. The Pandavas, they know that Krishna is Supreme Lord, but they're so caught up in their friendly relationships. In order for Bhagavad Gita to happen, Krishna has to arrange that Arjuna becomes covered. Krishna is using Arjuna to teach us a lesson. So Krishna arranges that Arjuna becomes covered and becomes doubtful about fighting the battle. But that arrangement is for our instruction. Kunti Devi knows Krishna is God. She's his aunt, but she knows he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Krishna went to Hastinapur on the peace mission, he went to see Kunti. She was staying with Vidura, and she saw him after offering her obeisances, sitting him down. She's aunt in the material, from the material point of view, she's in the superior position. So she treats him like her nephew, at the same time she treats him as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. She puts her arms around his neck and cries on his shoulder. Oh, my sons are suffering so much. Oh, I miss them, I miss them. She doesn't ask Krishna, why is this happening to my sons? She's a devotee. She knows the Lord has some plan behind all this. Why are my sons the epitome of all virtue? Why are they suffering? She didn't ask that question. She knew that Krishna has his way of doing things. And that ultimately, those who are sinful are vanquished. She knew that. So she just put her arms around Krishna's neck and cried, my sons, my sons, my sons, Draupadi, my beautiful daughter-in-law. Did you say something there about?
I have a short, small question and one comment on Vishnuvaya's question. Why is it fast but so hard? When Bhishma choose him, you know, when they choose Dhritarashtra as a king, then Dhritarashtra already say that he is not qualified for to be a king. But he was not fully present in the knowledge and faculty. He was blind. And in this blindness, he does not have a perfect understanding and realization about so attached with the blind people attached with the mental things. Although he has intelligence and he knows that, but he was mentally bonded with the blindness. the relationship between Yoga Maya and Mahamaya, is that Prabhupada discovered something somewhere?
Oh yes, it's all over Bhagavatam. It's in Bhagavad Gita also. Krishna says, Yoga Maya Samavrita. Naham Prakasha Sarvasya. I'm not manifest to everyone. Yoga Maya Samavrita. I'm covered by my Yoga Maya potency. Yoga Maya is the spiritual potency of the Lord, the internal potency, and a subdivision of it is Mahamaya, the external potency. Vishnu Shakti Prapta, Vishnu Purana says, the energy of the Lord, Vishnu Shakti, is all spiritual. But Krishna can cause that spiritual energy to act as the material energy. So for Krishna, there's actually no external energy. It's all for us. Just like when Krishna appeared, Yogamaya and Mahamaya were acting. Yogamaya was causing Vasudeva to take baby Krishna from Mathura to Braj. And Mahamaya was acting, causing the guards in the palace to sleep, not knowing what's going on. So Mahamaya acts on the non-devotees. The devotees, they get Yogamaya. In other words, you choose how you want to be bewildered, but you must be bewildered either by Krishna's internal potency in love or by his external potency in illusion. You must come under one influence or the other. Therefore, you know who's said to be the true person in charge of Vrindavan. Vrindavaneshri, the head of the internal potency. And that potency is so attractive that even Krishna becomes conquered.
Thank you.
You develop intelligence by studying the books and then always thinking, how can Krishna best be served? Regardless of my own private desires, what's best for Krishna's pleasure? That's how the spiritual intelligence develops. Krishna likes that, and he gives you more intelligence how to think for his pleasure. Have to keep trying to make everything fit. It's all for Krishna, but you want to develop the intelligence. What is the best thing for Krishna at a particular moment? Just like when Mother Yashoda was feeding baby Krishna, the milk on the stove overboiled. That milk on the stove was something she was personally doing for Krishna, because she was thinking, why is Krishna always going to other people's houses and stealing milk products? I'll make some tasty milk products myself in our own home, taking milk from special cows that only drink special grasses. This way the milk will have a special flavor, and I won't even ask my maidservants to do this. I'll do it myself. So that's why she was churning the milk and boiling the milk on the stove, all for Krishna, 100%, like everything in her house. But then Krishna had been sleeping, and he wanted to reciprocate with his mother by drinking her breast milk. So while she was tending the milk on the stove, he indicated, pulling on her, I want to be fed. So she was feeding him, looking into his beautiful face, but then the milk on the stove was overboiling. So she put Krishna down. Was she ignoring Krishna? No, she was doing what was necessary for Krishna's satisfaction. But Krishna took advantage of the scene to provoke even more love, so he put on a false show of anger to increase the loving reciprocation, which would end up with Mother Yashoda trying to bind him. And finally Krishna agreeing to be bound, not by the rope, but by her love. So, in a devotee's service, there are always going to be things in your devotional service that you have to choose between, how to satisfy Krishna best. Choosing like that increases your attraction for Krishna. You pray to Krishna, what is the best thing I can do for you now? I have a choice between two or three Krishna conscious things. Which one is the best for you now? That is personalism. And you have all your life to learn this art. Don't think it's something you learn, you know, in 1 year crash course. In the West, everything is instant, right? Ayurveda in 3 days. You can go to a bookshop now, get a book, Ayurveda Made Simple. Here it is in 30 pages. Now you understand. That's what people like. Satisfying Krishna. Okay. After 1 year, I know everything. No. Even in an ordinary relationship, you don't know a person after a few years. Do you know everything about Kadiravan? Still elements of mystery, right? So what makes you think you can understand Krishna in a few years? It's amazing. As I always say, we don't give Krishna the patience that we'll give ourselves. Oh, it takes a few years to understand her. Yeah, okay, we'll just go through that. But for Krishna, everything has to be immediate. 1 year, I know perfectly how to satisfy Krishna. No. Eternally, we'll be always thinking how to best satisfy Krishna. And Krishna appreciates that you're having that conscientious attitude, thinking what's best for you. You wouldn't do it if you didn't care. So don't think this is something you master in a fixed amount of time. It's just something you get better and better and better at, becoming more and more sensitive to Krishna's desires. As the verse says, the Kauravas, they played tricks against the desires of the Lord. They couldn't care less what Krishna wanted. They even tried to arrest Krishna. Do your best every morning to chant with attention and then depend on the mercy of the Lord. You do your side. Krishna will reciprocate in his own time. It's not a mechanical process. Personal relationships are not mechanistic. You know that word? Mechanical, mechanistic adjectives. You understand that? Mechanical is the same as mechanistic. You don't understand? Not machine-like. Personal relationships are not machine-like. You can't hold Krishna to a timetable. I'm doing this, so by a certain amount of time, certain time, you have to do that. Does that work in any kind of personal relationship? You hold the other person to a timetable. I'm acting in this way, so in 2 months from now, your emotions should reciprocate in that way. Have you tried that? Have you tried it? Doesn't work. You just have to act from your side and then see. Of course, Krishna will not disappoint you, but you can't hold him to a timetable.
opening.
Suicide comes because they see no alternative for happiness. Everyone needs some mental happiness. If they see no opportunity, no future for mental happiness, then they commit suicide. Therefore, you go out on Sankirtan, offering them Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, spiritual literature about Krishna, to give them hope. Everybody in this country knows some young person has committed suicide. This is how strong Maya is. Very scenic country, peaceful, calm, quiet, and so many people committing suicide. They don't know what to do with themselves. It's too quiet. There's no way to run from yourself. Better go to London and just get caught up in the passion. You don't have to think about yourself. Yes, isn't that what London's like? You just forget all about yourself, right? Just get caught up in the traffic and the hustle and bustle and getting big salary and paying high expenses. And never think about yourself. But here, there's not much, nowhere to hide. That's the problem. Therefore, people commit suicide. Right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. 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 Krishna.